If you'll take time to thumb through the Old Testament, it won't be long before you get to some story that involves water, and a lot of it. In Genesis chapter 6, we find the flood, a very important part of the Jewish culture. This is actually pre-Jewish culture, if you get technical. The father of the Jews is Abraham. Abraham came after the flood. But this story is still a part of their history. And of course, we know that the idea of the flood was a cleansing of the earth. All things were cleansed by water. This idea is so prevalent in Old Testament teaching. This idea of cleansing power, the cleansing power of water, is so seen throughout the text that Peter makes an allusion to it when he writes to the Jews in 1 Peter chapter 3. Of course, we know verse 21 culminates in baptism. But verse 20 talks about the flood. And the flood was an agent of cleansing. And by the flood, by water, those souls were saved. They were familiar with the ideas of baptism in that they knew that water cleansed things. It cleansed the earth in the history of the Jews. And we also have another example of water being a significant part of the Jewish culture, at least Jewish history, in that Moses led the children of Israel through the Red Sea. You'll remember that in the Old Testament, the Jews were enslaved by the Egyptians. And God commanded Pharaoh, or rather commanded Moses to go to Pharaoh and demand that his people be let go to worship. That didn't happen. So 10 plagues came along, and eventually Pharaoh let them go. And as they are leaving Egypt towards the promised land, Pharaoh changes his mind. He began to pursue them. He pursues them and corners them at the Red Sea. And it is there that Moses raises his arms, and the Red Sea divides. Children of Israel walk through freely as they are covered with water, water on each side of them. Paul sees this as a reference to baptism. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 and 2, you see Paul referring to the baptism of Moses, where they are surrounded by water. They understood that water cleanses, and that water can offer them protection in a sense. And Paul made that reference in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The flood showed ideas about baptism. The crossing of the Red Sea showed ideas about baptism. We have in 2 Kings chapter 5 the story of Naaman, who was a leper, and he is cleansed by water. He is told to go dip in the Jordan 7 times, and that was going to be able to cleanse his body from leprosy. They understood ideas about baptism, that baptism was powerful, that water could cleanse, and that these were things that happened on a day-to-day basis and certainly was a part of their history. The Jews were familiar with the ideas of baptism simply because of their history. Water had been a part of who they were, even ceremoniously in their law. Notice that it was also a part of their law. In Leviticus chapter 14 through 16, we see some passages that deal with cleansing. If you were to look at the book of Leviticus and try to take out all of the commandments of God, then you wouldn't have a whole lot left. This is a whole book of commandments. This is a list of things that had to do with priestly commandments for the Levites, specifically the children of Levi. And in this book of commandments, we have a lot of rituals that needed to take place. In chapter 14, we encounter what should be done when a person is healed from leprosy. In chapter 13, we see what a person should do if he was found to be leprous, if he was found to be afflicted with leprosy, he was to do these certain things, and the priests were to treat him in this certain way, chapter 13. But chapter 14 tells us what would happen if that leprosy left him. If the leprosy left someone, notice here in chapter 14 that a man should be dipped in water, that he should bathe in water. In order to be ceremoniously clean, he needed to wash himself, verses 8 and 9. Similar issue is talked about in chapter 15, but jump over to chapter 16 and notice here that the Day of Atonement is kept in mind. On the Day of Atonement being a very big day in Jewish culture, there was a lot of ceremonies that needed to happen. But of these ceremonies that needed to happen, verse 4, verse 24, and verse 26 tell us that a washing of the whole body, again, a bathing of the body needed to happen in order for the priests or those dealing with the things of the priest to be ceremoniously clean. In order for them to be able to carry on with their day, to do the things they needed to do on the Day of Atonement, they needed to present themselves ceremoniously clean, and they had to bathe themselves head to toe. This was the law. They had to, in essence, be baptized in order to be clean so that they could offer a sacrifice to God. The ideas of baptism were rooted in their history. Ideas of baptism were in their laws. But in the third place, notice that their traditions also carried ideas of baptism. This is where we're going to spend most of our time. The traditions of the Jews started out as aids to fulfilling the law. If there was a certain law that was difficult to be carried out, the traditions that the Jews would create would help someone carry that law out, make sure that they carried it to the fullest way possible. An example of this is seen in the idea of baptizing, or rather washing the priests for the Day of Atonement. It got to be such an issue that they were so worried about not being ceremoniously clean that there were inspections that were demanded by the traditions of the Jews. These inspections were so thorough that they even checked the teeth of the priest to make sure there was no food in their teeth, because they believed that if there was a speck of food between the teeth of a Jewish priest and the water that he was being baptized into, then that priest was no longer clean. He wasn't completely purified by the water. And so traditions came about to ensure that the law was carried out to the letter. These traditions are a source of kind of a pulse of the Jewish nation. When we see them build their traditions, we see where they are spiritually. And eventually what came to happen was that these traditions became law. They became more important than even the law itself. There are several points throughout rabbinic literature that very plainly state that the traditions of the fathers and the elders should be considered as greater than the prophets or greater than the law. And so it's shocking to most people, but those statements are right there in the text of rabbinic literature. That's how much force these laws had. And what we see is an evolution of purity laws, laws that pertain to being clean, laws that pertain to being ceremoniously righteous. We encounter one such situation in Matthew chapter 15. In Matthew chapter 15, you'll remember that the priests, or the Pharisees and Sadducees approached Jesus and questioned him, saying, "Why is it that your disciples break the traditions of the elders, for they do not wash their hands?" Notice the force of that phrase. When they start out by asking why they were breaking the traditions of the elders, what they're saying is, your disciples are worthy of disfellowship. This is not a hygiene issue. This is not something that they're telling Jesus' disciples to do because they're concerned about their health. This is a fellowship issue. They're willing to kick them out of the synagogue for breaking the traditions of the elders. Over what? Hand washing. Hand washing became one of those traditions that had such force that it was absolutely necessary for Jews to participate in. And when they didn't, they would risk being kicked out of the synagogue. In fact, there is an example of such a man, of one man being kicked out of the synagogue. He was a rabbi, Rabbi Eleazar ben Hazar, just after the time of Jesus, was disfellowshipped, kicked out of the synagogue for, and I quote, "He was not concerned with the washing of hands." That was his crime. He was guilty of not being concerned with the washing of hands, and he was kicked out of the synagogue for it. This was a serious issue. Well, what was the issue? They wanted to put a focus on being ceremoniously clean. Again, it wasn't a hygiene thing. This was them trying to make themselves holy by the washing of hands. And that's what the whole issue is in chapter 15 of Matthew. Well, it just progressed from there. Bodily cleansing became commonplace. It wasn't just the hands anymore. At certain points, it became the entire body. And that's what I wanted to show you today. We know that the Jews became more and more increasingly concerned with washing the whole body because we have archaeological evidence of pools in people's homes. These pools were called mikvahs. And these mikvahs served one purpose. It was to allow someone to be dipped, their entire body to be baptized, if you will, in order to be ceremoniously clean. They became so commonplace that they began to see them in homes of Jewish people, of wealthy Jewish people. They had their own personal mikvahs that they could baptize themselves in. This is what they would look like. I'm having the same problem Don Myers did. None of the buttons are working. But the lights are on, so thank you. I think they did that. This is one of the mikvahs here. It didn't look very impressive. They're still kind of searching this one out. But you can see a staircase leading to a basin, and all this would be filled with water. They would go into it, baptize themselves, and then come out ceremoniously clean. Here's another one. I don't know if you can see it here, but notice right here, there's a little divider. And that divider was important to them because at some point it wasn't just enough to get into the water and come out. You had to go in one way and up the other. You'd go in unclean and you'd leave clean. This is illustrated even better in the next picture. Look at this staircase here. You have one set of stairs here, another set of stairs here. You would you go into it unclean and leave the other side clean. And if you set up a mikvah in a certain way, it would stay that way. One side was the unclean way, and the other side was the clean way. It was very symbolic. They were very concerned about being completely ceremoniously clean. And so we see this kind of thing all throughout Israel. These, I think, were all actually at the Qumran community, just outside of the Dead Sea area. But these were found in Jerusalem, and they all date to the time of Jesus, right around the time of Jesus. And so you have a lot of evidence that this became a commonplace practice. And that's why we see those pools in Jesus' day, the Pool of Siloam, the Pool of Bethesda, so on and so forth. All these pools are for the poor to be able to be ceremoniously clean. And so you see an emphasis on bodily cleanliness, not necessarily for the sake of cleanliness, but for the sake of ceremony, of being able to present themselves holy and clean. This continues today, actually. I found pictures of modern mikvahs, a nice marble slab mikvah. This is actually a very ornate one, has a spiral staircase that goes down into it, which I thought was interesting. But you can see that this is a part of their culture and has been for a very long time. And it was because of their traditions. The Jews were familiar with the ideas of baptism. They understood that it was scattered all throughout their history, the washing power of the flood. They saw the baptism of Moses as the water covered them as they passed through the Red Sea. They saw people like Naaman being washed by water, even of leprosy in their history. They saw in their laws ideas of baptism. They saw that they needed to wash themselves in order to approach God. The priests were required to bathe themselves completely before the Day of Atonement. And that carried on and produced traditions. Hand washing, daily body washings. And that all built to one tradition in particular that would influence, I believe, the Jewish reaction to the idea of Christian baptism. And that is this. Right before the time of Christ, it is believed that a practice began in which proselytes had to be baptized. A proselyte was a Gentile who decided he wanted to become Jewish. He wanted to convert to Judaism. And so what would happen is this Gentile would go through a big course of things, really, but that would culminate in a baptism. They would have to be baptized into water in order to come out ceremoniously clean in order to be a part of the Jewish culture, to be a part of the Jewish family. Doesn't that sound familiar? I hope your gears are turning at this point, because they were once I learned this point. When I saw that the Jews were requiring people to be baptized in order to become Jewish, Everything seemed to fall in place. In Matthew chapter 21, in verse 25, we're positive, we see this a very interesting situation. Actually, verse 23 records that the elders, the leaders of the Jewish community, came to Jesus and thought they could trap him with a question. They thought they could trap him with the words. And the question they posited was this: by what authority do you do these things, and from whom does it come? In other words, why are you the person in charge? Jesus knew that if he were to say that his authority was from heaven, that they would arrest him for blasphemy. He also knew that if he said his power was from man, that they would be able to dismiss everything he's done and everything he said. So instead of answering the question, Jesus, in his divine wisdom, asks a question of his own and puts them in the same position that they had tried to put him in. He asks this question. He says, from where does the baptism of John come? From heaven or from men? And they found themselves in the same position that they had tried to put Jesus in. They knew that if they said it was from heaven, that they would be required to do that thing. But if they said it was from men, then the people would get mad at them because they held John to be a prophet. What we learn here is that the Jews had an aversion to baptism. They did not want to be baptized. The Jewish leaders did not want to participate in the baptism of John. Why? Because in being baptized into the baptism of John, they would have to place themselves on the same level as a Gentile. They would have to acknowledge that they needed to be baptized in order to be a part of this kingdom. And that's something they just weren't willing to do. When it comes down to it, the issues that Jesus was teaching on always, consistently throughout the Gospels, is that the kingdom is coming and you are not ready. The Jews were not willing to see themselves, place themselves on equal footing as the Gentiles. And so baptism became an issue that I believe stopped them from obeying the gospel. It may not be the only reason, but it certainly played a part. So then the question comes to us: why does this matter? What do we learn from this situation? Well, first of all, in terms of our evangelism, I think we see the same kind of attitude in the world. When we approach someone with the gospel of Christ, they have difficulty, maybe, obeying because of two things that they share with the Jews. One, they're already convinced that they're in a relationship with God that is right. And two, they don't have the faith, they don't have faith enough in what we're saying to go to that next level. That's easy. I think we all see that. I think we can all understand that that's what's going on in someone's mind. And with that knowledge, I think we can be more understanding. But with that knowledge also, I think we need to look at ourselves and know that they are not the only ones struggling with those attitudes. We also struggle with those same attitudes. They may not look the same because we've already been baptized. We've already taken on the Lord in baptism if we're a member of the church. The difficulties is living in daily life where we insist, just like the Jews insisted, they are the seed of Abraham, they are the descendants of Abraham, and so we are worthy, we are deserving of this salvation. I think sometimes we get into that same rut, and we can become capable of thinking that we have deserved the gift of God, the salvation that is so freely given to us. And we forget to humble ourselves as the Jews needed to humble themselves. We believe, we have a lack of faith that the things that we are told to do will actually work, that they will profit us for righteousness' sake and in our living. And so we're trapped by the same attitudes that the Pharisees, scribes, and Jewish leaders had in that day. We know that the Jews were familiar with the ideas of baptism. that water cleanses, that they needed to wash themselves to be ceremoniously clean before God. We have evidence that the pagans understood this, that they had similar practices. What kept them from obeying? What kept them from being from Jesus? It was simply because they did not want to humble themselves. When we look at 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 21, a familiar verse to us again, we see Peter making an appeal that baptism saves us. Not the washing of the filth of the flesh, or as the ESV says, not removing the dust from the body, but appealing to God. Sorry about that. Appealing to God for a good conscience. That is, appealing to God for the forgiveness of sins. That's what baptism is. We are submitting ourselves, humbling ourselves, placing ourselves in the need of salvation, knowing that we cannot be justified by any other means except through Christ. And we appeal to him for the forgiveness of sins. That's what baptism is about. And if we can remember that on a day-to-day basis, if we can remember the reasons why we obeyed Christ, that is to seek out peace in our lives and with God, to find forgiveness of sins, those are the things that will encourage us to live the life that we need to live and do the things that we need to do. And if we are able to do that successfully, if we are able to present ourselves as those who are concerned with holiness, that we are concerned with righteousness, then we can encourage others by our life to do the same thing, to obey the gospel and take that step in baptism. Where do you find yourself this morning? Have you obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ? Have you been baptized for the forgiveness of sins, to find peace in him? Or do you find yourselves outside of Christ? If you need to be baptized, we want to help you with that. We want to study with you and show you that these are the things that Christ has commanded us to do, that Christ wants us to do, and that it is the right thing to do. If it's the case that you've already been baptized, but you fall into pride, you fall into unfaithfulness in a sense of lacking faith, then please make that right with God today. And if we can help you at all, come forward as together we stand and sing.
Wonderful day I will never forget. After I'd wandered in darkness away,